You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Over the Monster podcast. As is the case every week, it is me, your host, Matt Collins, and after a brief absence, Brian Joyner is back with us. He's back from the island of Martha's Vineyard. Brian, how are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm well rested, but I'm still pedantic enough to note that every introduction you say, back to another, which seems a little redundant.
You always have some sort of comment about my grammar. I missed that last week. Jake did not diss my grammar. He did, however, throw some shade at the island of Martha's Vineyard. So
one would expect that. One would expect that from smaller brained creatures such as Jake. And Jake is the key offender in the your versus you are your war, which I delight in teasing him about, but we have come to a playful place with it that maybe you and I haven't reached yet, but we'll get there.
We'll see. We'll see if we'll get there. But you did not miss the greatest. It was an okay week of baseball. I guess you were back this weekend when things got bad again. But Red Sox are playing kind of just decent baseball instead of bad, but they are in first place despite that because the Rays, who we will talk about in a little bit, have lost 6 in a row. So the Red Sox, as we talk here today, Tuesday afternoon, before the first game of the big series against the Rays, Red Sox are a half game up. Before we get to that series, there is a little bit of news for the Red Sox. This will be a little outdated by the time you hear it, but the gist will still be right. So Kevin Pilecki has not officially been placed on the IL yet as we sit here Tuesday afternoon, but Chris Cotello reported Monday night that it's going to happen. By the time you are listening to this, it will have already happened. Pilecki tweaked the hamstring going after a bad throw from Kike Hernandez. Didn't look too serious, but he did leave the game. Obviously, going on the IL means there's something going on. But the real interesting part of this probably is who will be called up to take his place. So really only the only two options are going to be either Connor Wong or Chris Herrmann. Connor Wong, part of the Mookie Betts trade. He is on the 40-man, definitely has a higher ceiling, but also has not really played much this season. When he has played, it's been very good. Chris Herrmann, a Major League veteran, long track record of mediocrity in the majors, has never really looked like a guy who belongs, but he's hitting pretty well at AAA. You have any preference between the two, given where the Red Sox are right now? Go with the higher ceiling or the guy who's been there and is hitting a little better right now?
I think that they're more likely to go with Herrmann because it seems to a closer one-to-one replacement for Plawecki. And while Wong, it would encourage me in some ways if they brought up Wong. And I would also like to see more of the deal in action. But I suspect that they will call up Herrmann, because if the way you described him was pretty much how you described Plawecki. I mean, Plawecki's better, which is why he was on the team. But this is the backup catcher, not the starting catcher. So I almost feel like if it had to be the starter, Wong would be maybe, now that Plawecki's out, would be the choice. But since it's a backup, I would suspect it'll be Herrmann.
I think I agree. I mean, that makes the most sense in a vacuum. The only issue there is just the 40-man part of it. Connor Wong is on the 40-man. Chris Herrmann isn't. So there would have to be some counter move, although I don't think it's too difficult to figure out a counter move. There are a few viable options there. And I think it is kind of important to just let Connor Wong keep playing. Like I said, he missed a bunch of time with a hamstring injury. He's only played in 16 games down at Worcester this year. And prior to this year, he had never played in AAA at all. He's not hitting well. He's hitting 148, 188, 246 in those 16 games. So it's not going very well. I think it makes the most sense for the team to get a guy who's been up before and probably has a higher floor right now than Connor Wong. And it also makes sense for Connor Wong long-term to get that development. It's also worth mentioning that part of the appeal of Wong is that he's able to play. He's not just a catcher. He plays some second base, some third base. I don't think he's ever played the outfield, but I'm sure at some point they'll probably get him some time doing that. But the Red Sox don't really need, like, versatility is not really a need for the Red Sox right now. So I think the only reason you would really call up Wong instead of Herrmann is that you don't want to make a move on the 40-man. But that doesn't outweigh the positives of Herrmann.
I mean, the 40-man thing does. It's interesting to me when that condition matters and when it does not. And I've sort of given up trying to figure that out. But I definitely agree with you that the goal is for Wong to be playing. And this would, because even though he's versatile, he's not going to jump in and be playing second every day that he's not playing catcher. That's just not going to happen. There's too many of the middle infielders. You say it's not a need. Well, it kind of is, but I don't think so much that they're going to use Connor Wong to push Marwin Gonzalez off the team. Feel like it would be somebody or something else. So I suspect it will be Herrmann, and it will be scarcely noticeable the difference between him and Plawecki, except for that maybe he plays less often.
Yeah, and I mean, Plawecki hasn't really been playing that much either. Vasquez is at or near the top of the catcher leaderboard in games played this year. I think the thing, what will be interesting, I mean, I think there's a case for calling up Wong if this Plawecki injury, if they think it's only going to be 10 days, they might say it's not really worth making a 40-man move to have a guy who will come in and play maybe twice in these 10 games, if that. So I could see that, but my counter to that would be they need 40-man spots coming up anyways. For Jaren Duran, we'll get to later, eventually will be up this year, I would hope. Chris Sale should be back at some point this year, not to mention trade acquisitions. I mean, they're going to need 40-man spots eventually, so if they have to use one on Herman for 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever it is, and then take him off the 40, that's, I mean, in the long run, they're going to have to make that move anyways, or some sort of move anyway. So I don't want to say it's going to be Herman, because people listening to this will already know, and I don't want to be made to sound stupid, but that's the one that makes the most sense to me. I think you're pretty brave saying that's what it's going to be, when people will know whether you're right or wrong right away.
I think that, no, I said that's what it's most likely to be.
Okay. I don't think so. That's all right.
Well, the only thing they're listening to us for are thought processes, so.
No, I know. I was just giving you a hard time.
When have I ever given you a hard time in the last 2 minutes?
Well, I was going to say maybe 6 minutes ago whenever we started this. So if they did have to, if it was Herman, they did have to clear a 40-man spot. Like I said, they have options. To me, I think there are four pretty clear ones, all in the Major League roster. Danny Santana, Matt Andrews, Brandon Workman, and Yaxel Rios. Who do you think, if you had to choose, who would it be? And I guess if it's a different answer, maybe who do you think is more likely?
I mean, Yaxel Rios has pitched 2 innings.
Has he only pitched 2 innings?
Unless my crack research before the show was wrong. He's sure pitched 2 innings.
It feels like he's been warming up every game. But yeah, he has pitched 2 innings.
I would say, regardless of anything else, that makes him the most likely candidate.
I think so. I think he would be. It would cut down a pitcher and go back to the 4-man bench. I don't know that they would want to do that. So unless there was another move in there to option somebody, I don't know who would have options to go down. So, I mean, that could get a little complicated. I think he probably is the most likely. I also wouldn't be surprised if Danny Santana's time was over.
And if his time was over, who would be taking his place?
Well, I think it could be Herman for 10 days, and then maybe you DFA him and get Duran up. The thing is, it would be to make space for Herman, but eventually, yeah, hopefully, it would be Duran.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. I mean, I think when it comes down to it, what you just said, that sequence of events makes it more likely to be Herman, simply because this is why they have him in the organization, it seems like. Why have this guy in the organization otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, they knew they needed a veteran catcher in case Wong wasn't ready when somebody got hurt. It seems like Wong's not ready when somebody gets hurt, so it does make the most sense.
But this way, you'll be kicking, you kick the can the 10 days at least, and then however long you expect Plawecki or hope Plawecki is healthy. And then if you have to, I mean, look, will Chris Herman still be around? If they cut him from the 40 man after the 10 days, would he likely go back to Worcester or be out of the organization?
Well, that would be up to him, and it would probably depend on how he played in a small sample. And I mean, maybe he thinks there's a better chance somewhere else, especially with Wong right there. If he got designated and cleared waivers, he has enough service time where he'd get to decide whether or not he gets to he wants to stay in the organization or become a free agent. And I really have no idea what he would choose. I could see the case for either one.
Well, I could also see, this does seem like you could trade for a backup catcher on a team that's out of the playoff run pretty easily if you had to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's too hard to find a Chris Herman somewhere. And they have Jet Bandy, who is like another slightly worse version of Chris Herman in AAA as well. So, I mean, they have the catching.
Not in the name department. No, sir.
You don't like Jet Bandy?
I do like Jet Bandy.
Oh, you don't like Chris Herman?
Well, it's no Jet Bandy.
Yeah, no. Jet Bandy is a good name. I do want to go into, I mean, I do think it's possible that Wong is called up, like I said, just because of the 40-man thing. And then if Wong is called up, and maybe Pulowecki's injury is a little longer than the 10 days, and Wong gets a little more of a chance to show out, and he hits well. I mean, players generally, in all sports, generally, the rule of thumb is you don't really lose your job to injury. I think that's a little overplayed, and sometimes you do, and Drew Bledsoe is the example I think of. But generally, I mean, teams try not to do that. Do you think there is a chance, though, considering Pulowecki's has not really been that great this year anyways, and his defense kind of taking a hit? He's not really doing anything at the plate. Do you think there's a chance, if Wong played well in his absence, that they would just cut Pulowecki?
Unlikely. Seems unlikely to me.
I think it seems unlikely to me, too, just because they would want to keep the depth, but I think it would be enticing. I mean, the issue would be Wong probably wouldn't have enough time to make that much of an impression that he would cause them to make that shift. But I do think he has the talent. I mean, he obviously has massive power. So, I mean, if he hit three home runs in three games or something, maybe they'd think about it. But I think you're probably right that Pulowecki is here to stay. And I do like Pulowecki. He hasn't provided much in either side this year.
I mean, I'm also sort of reading into the each player is different, but at this point we're getting near the Duran o'clock, which I know we're going to talk about, but it does lead me to believe that they have defined or at least considerable goals or expectations for their top players in the minors. They're not the Dombrowski where it's like, all right, Devers, go, you're playing. It does seem like they are committed to that to some degree, and I would not be surprised if that's team-wide. I mean, organization-wide, and not specifically simply Duran.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so let's move on to the schedule coming up. I mean, we've talked a lot. It seems like every week has been a big week for the Red Sox over the last, like, 3 or 4 weeks. Just a lot of good teams. Obviously, we've been talking about this stretch, and it just keeps going. But I think there's an argument that this week coming up is the biggest of them all, just because it's two division rivals. They're facing the second-place team and then the third-place team, the Rays and the Yankees. They start, like I said, tonight when we're recording this against the Rays. When you're listening to this, you'll already know what happened in Game 1. We don't know that, but the Red Sox do play the Rays, and the Rays are reeling. Like I said, they've lost 6 in a row. The Red Sox have retaken first place despite not really playing that great of baseball lately. I think we both agreed, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we both agreed that the Rays were a little bit better than the Red Sox last time, although it was close. The Rays lost Tyler Glasnow probably for the rest of the season, although I think they're still holding out hope he'll be back for the last month or so in some capacity. But is that injury, I mean, Glasnow's their top pitcher, is that injury enough to put the Red Sox ahead of them for the rest of the season in your mind?
Well, given that the Red Sox top pitcher is about to, well, not about to come back, but is stalking the Woo Sox. I think that the Red Sox should be considered the favorite, unless, like, Toronto gets Max Scherzer, the Blue Jays. I'm not going to call them Toronto right now. And they would have to go on some sort, you know, they would have to go on a tear. I think the Red Sox are the favorite right now.
I think, I don't know. I mean, I find it tough to put the Red Sox up there just because the Rays seem to pull pitching out of nowhere every single year. But, I mean, Fangraphs does have them as the favorite. They have the Red Sox at a 40% chance of winning the division. The Yankees at 29% chance, even though they're behind the Rays by 4 games right now. And the Rays are at 20%. I'm assuming that's mostly because of the Glasnow injury. I think I've just been hesitant to buy into the Red Sox being a favorite all season, and I still kind of am, and I'm running out of good reasons to feel that way other than it just still doesn't feel right, but I'm really interested to see what happens in this series. And
do you think those projections account for Chris Sale?
Yeah, I would assume so. They obviously don't know how many innings they're going to pitch, but they usually, I mean, they plug in innings. I don't know what they've plugged in for Sale the rest of the season, but I would imagine they have him maybe making like 8 starts, 10 starts, something. They're usually pretty conservative, but he'll be in there.
Yeah, that the conservative part was, I think, a sort of a sub question I may have had. So I would say that you could, and I could try to thread the needle here by saying, you know, it just depends on what Chris Hale does. If he comes back and is great, then and can pass whatever the implicit conservative projection is, it gets them to 40. I could see that being 50 and then 51, 49, whatever. So I could also say that, yes, if Chris Sale comes back and is limited in some way and the Red Sox, you know, they're still due for a pitching injury, I can see why the Rays would be the favorite then. So, yeah, I see it both ways.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we've been saying it the whole time, but it's pretty close. And I think the Yankees are close in there, too. I mean, I have this a little further down, but if we were to rank these three teams, I guess right now I would probably go Red Sox, Rays, Yankees, but I do think they're all very close. And I would be hard-pressed to disagree with somebody arguing for any of the three being the favorite in the division right now.
Except for, I don't know if you're going to find anyone who's going to say the Yankees are, which doesn't make it wrong. I think Yankees fans are still a little snake bit from the beginning of the year.
I know they are. The Yankees fans are miserable right now. They've been playing pretty well, but even playing pretty well, they are not. I mean, I saw people today talking, Yankees fans today talking about they only won because they were gifted like a game-ending triple play in their last game against the A's. And it's worth noting, Baseball Prospectus does have the Yankees as the favorite by Pacoda. They have the Yankees as a heavy favorite, 57% chance to win the division. The Red Sox are lower, below 8% to win the division by Pacoda.
Well, if you trust Craig, that's on you.
Craig single-handedly puts together the Pacoda projections. Not a lot of people know that.
That's my understanding.
Yes, I believe I used to work there. I believe that's the way it goes. So the other big reason, I mean, just beyond it being the top two teams of the division and two potential pennant teams, the Rays are clearly a little bit worried about how they're playing, and this is obviously a big series. They are responding by calling up Wander Franco, who has been the top prospect in baseball for, I don't even know how long now, 2-3 years. He is incredible talent, basically. I mean, true 5-tool player, does everything extremely well. It's really not great for the Red Sox if this guy's going to be in division for however long he's with the Rays. And, I mean, this is the time to get into the Duran conversation. Let's say right off the top, Jaron Duran is not Wander Franco. Wander Franco is in a totally different league than Jaron Duran. But should the Red Sox be countering Wander Franco with Jaron Duran, get their own not top prospect, but very good top 30 according to Baseball America prospect?
Well, let me just say that right now you are finally speaking my language. It took 10, 11. When we're talking only about top prospects, that's it, baby. That's where I live. I just want to push back. Like, look, Franco's better than Duran. That's not a question. There have been two players to have 80 grade hit tools ever by MLB Pipeline since, you know, it's been around like 10, 12 years. Vlad Jr. and Wander. And you're like, okay, that's impressive. Wander's a switch hitter, and he has 80 from both sides of the plate. That alone is one of the most amazing things I've ever heard in baseball, period.
He's defense and speed, too. I mean, it's not even just offense, which is...
Yeah. The other thing is, I just wanted to say, he's not Wander. Well, on some lists, Jared Kelnick was and is Fantrax released their top 300 midseason prospects today, and Kelnick was still number one and Franco number two. I think there's a 40% chance at this point that Duran has a better career than Kelnick. Duran's absolute level of skill right now is incredibly high. He's grown into it. There was an article recently about how his dad was like, yo, man, go lift weights.
Yeah, Alex Spiro thought that was a great article.
Right. And so, you know, we just don't know these things. But what we do know about Franco is that it's going to be, I mean, I think almost something we haven't seen before in baseball. And that's really hard to say. We've seen great switch hitters, you know, Mickey Mantle. I'm not that old.
I was like, did you see Mickey Mantle?
I'm not that old. No one who, a middle infielder who's just doing everything and being maybe the best, most talented hitter in baseball level, from both sides of the plate is just incredible. It's just in theory. So I'm very excited to see what happens. And I hope he stays in the AL East his whole career. Let's just put it that way.
You hope he stays in the AL East?
I didn't say what team he'd be on.
Yeah, you hope he's on the Red Sox.
Yes, that is what I hope.
Oh, yeah. Well,
except for he's going to overlap with Xander so much that, though, I mean, Wander's going to play, you know, he's a Ray, so he's going to play second, third, and short.
Yeah. Okay, so. What about Duran?
I think that the dominoes are starting to fall now. And I mean, the season, it's summer now.
It's halfway over. I mean, not exactly halfway over, but they've played 72 games. It'll be 73 after tonight. They're pretty much halfway through the season.
Do you think that they're just waiting for Matthew Corey to jump off a bridge in Portland, Oregon, because of the leadoff hitter situation? And then as soon as they hear he does that, they're like, all right, Duran, you're up. You're batting leadoff.
I mean, that would be pretty cruel, but I suppose that's a possibility.
Wouldn't be the cruelest they've been to him.
To Matt?
That's a second Mookie trade reference.
Okay. I thought that's what you're talking about, but I figured I'd at least spell it out. No, I mean, I honestly, at this point, I don't know what the holdup for Duran is. I understand. I mean, I wrote a whole thing about this the other day. I'm starting to get really frustrated. I understand that he's not a perfect player. I understand that there are still things he needs to work on. I understand that the Red Sox offense has been pretty good. None of that means that he shouldn't be up. He can work on his defense in the majors. They could put him in left field. They have Verdugo for center. They have Renfro for right. They could put Duran in left field and just have those three play the outfield every day. And Marwin Gonzalez can lose some time. And Danny Santana could come off the roster. And Kike Hernandez can lose some time. It's driving me nuts. He's clearly one of the 26 best players in the roster. And I've been a little patient. I've understood letting him develop, but this race is so close. This race is going to come down to the margins and who's making these little moves at the right time. And this, maybe it's not the right time. Maybe they know what they're talking about. It's a decent possibility that they know what they're talking about better than me. But from where I'm standing, I just do not. I have not heard a compelling case for why he wouldn't be up.
I think you made a very good point with the timeline following Herman, if it is indeed Herman who comes up. It's also because that will put us past the halfway point of the season. And it's possible that there's just an internal decision that, like, Duran will come up in the second half. And again, this is why I was hesitant to say that Wong would come up. It seems like they're being very deliberate with the guys in the minors. And I'd say Duran specifically, but I don't even know if it's him specifically. It could be more than just him. So I do suspect that not by the next episode, but by the episode after that, he will be up.
Well, I think there's, if I had to bet on a time frame, that would probably be it for me as well. Not so much because of the halfway point thing, but I think I think probably the most compelling case against calling him up right now, and it's not one that I would necessarily argue myself, but I can at least understand it, is that they wouldn't want to call him up during a stretch like this. Just that organizationally, I mean, obviously, Chaim Bloom is running the front office now, so we can't look at the past as a true barometer of what they would always do. But historically, they have made these big call-ups when they're on the West Coast. And they go on the West Coast the weekend of the 4th. They're in Oakland on the 2nd, and then they go play the Angels after that. That I would not be surprised if that's when Durant comes up. He meets them in Oakland, starts on the West Coast, and then gets to kind of cruise into the All-Star break out West. They have one series at home, and then they jump into it after the break. I don't think that's compelling enough. I think Durant can handle a series like this. There's nothing in his pro career that would lead me to believe otherwise, but that would be my guess of their thinking.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, given their track record, the timing of it, I don't know why they think it's that important to do. I mean, I can obviously read into it, you know, exactly what you said. You get games under your belt before you're in front of the home crowd, and you don't over worry about something like that. I hope so. I mean, I hope they do it. We all want to see him play. He's obviously a better option than some of the guys they have right now.
It sounds like an oversimplification, but that is the case. Just like, period. He's one of the 26 best players. They are clearly contenders now. I mean, you can quibble with how likely they are to win the division or whatever, how likely they are to go deep into October, but they are clearly contenders and favorites to make the playoffs at this point, although Pakoda does disagree. I think most would agree that they are favorites to at least get a wild card spot, and I mean, it's time to stop worrying about the future. Plus, Durant's 25 years old. It's not like we're talking about a 20-year-old kid who needs seasoning under his belt. He's 25. Like, it's time. It's time.
Yeah. I mean, he was like the best player on the Olympic team. Come on. Yeah.
So hopefully that's soon, although probably won't be this week. Although that's one thing I would love to be wrong about when people hear this. So let's move on to the weekend series coming up against the Yankees. Like I said, the Yankees are playing better baseball right now, even if Yankees fans aren't totally buying into what's happening. Are you buying into it? Are the Yankees finally getting back into this, and we're going to have to worry about them along with the Rays at the top of the division all year?
Yes.
Yeah.
We've just been happy all year that they hadn't hit the stride that by all measures they have in them, and now they have. So I am not thrilled, but it could have been way worse to this point. So I'll take that part of it.
I mean, the wins are already in the bank, and the Red Sox are up by 4.5 games. So the Yankees, if the Yankees are going to surpass them, they have to play 5 games better the rest of the season. Certainly far from impossible, but the Red Sox are in the driver's seat. I will say there are still some things that worry me about the Yankees. Number one is still health. Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton are still huge parts of this lineup, and they have always struggled to stay healthy. So if I was a Yankees fan, I would still be very concerned about that. And I mean, I'm assuming they're going to make a move at the deadline, but their pitching beyond Cole is still not something that scares me too much. I believe, is Kluber out for the season? I think he is, right?
If not for the season, he's
out for a long time. Severino, I don't know when he's coming back. I know he suffered some sort of setback when he was he suffered a little bit of a setback or something, or they're taking it slow with him like Sale, but he underwent Tommy John right around the time Chris Sale did, so that's probably a similar expectation there. I don't know, their pitching staff doesn't scare me. I think they're definitely the team that scares me about getting Max Scherzer. If they have Garrett Cole and Max Scherzer, that's a totally different dynamic, especially once you get into the playoffs, but even over the final 2 months of the season. I mean, then I would be scared. I might call them the favorites in the division.
Yes, I think you nailed it.
But
it's, it's not something I want to think about, so I'm not gonna.
that is a fair viewpoint. All right, let's predict how things are gonna go this week. This is, like I said, this is the biggest week on the schedule so far for the Red Sox. 6 games, 3 against the Rays on the road, 3 against the Yankees at home. What's their record in that stretch, just over those 6 games?
3-3.
Which series do they win?
The Rays.
Okay. I was going to say the same, but the opposite. So 3-3, but they win against the Yankees. Just being at home, and hopefully the Yankees are still down a little bit. And that sweep from last weekend can stay in their head a little bit longer. The Red Sox do have to face Cole in that series, which is unfortunate because they got to miss him last time. But I think 3-3 sounds about right, and I will certainly take 3-3 from this stretch. However they divvy it up, although I probably wouldn't want to see a sweep on either side, but 3-3 sounds okay.
But I mean, this is what it is. It's like an NFC East, all very old school. Just a lot of shoulders being thrown. There's no way out of it.
It's not this past year's NFC East.
Oh God, no.
Yeah. So I forget what I was gonna say. So another thing I mentioned that I had written about Duran's call up. Another thing I had written about on the off day on Monday that people got very mad at me about was, and we talked about this already, so I know sort of where you stand, but I'm interested to dig into it a little bit more. I wrote about Devers being the perfect fit for the Home Run Derby and how much I wanted to see him, and I thought there would be a little bit of pushback, but not quite as much as there was. People are very worried about his swing being messed up. Is that something you would be worried about if he were in it?
No. 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 Not at all. Let the man have fun. Come on. If he wants to be in it, he's...
And I don't even know if he wants to be in it, to be clear. He might not.
I believe
to. I know Vlad Jr. said he didn't want to.
That's fine. Vlad Jr. can worry about winning the MVP. Devers can worry about playing baseball. I have no qualms with it whatsoever. Same way I would have no qualms if... JD Martinez did it, or it just, oh, I feel bad because I took too many home runs. Okay, take an extra day off. You'll be fine. I know that people have said, ascribed it to slumps, but I suspect if you check the record, most of the players in the Home Run Derby probably hit in aggregate the same home runs at the same rate they did before.
Well, I actually don't think they did, but Mike Petriello wrote something about this a few years ago that I think about a lot. Players in the Home Run Derby usually do slow down their home run rate a little bit after the Home Run Derby, but that's not because of the swing, at least in most cases. There's probably a few cases where somebody's swing did get messed up, but for the most part, it's because to get in the Home Run Derby, you need to hit a shitload of home runs in the first half, and just play. You're probably not going to keep up that pace for the whole season. That's just the way baseball works. You have a great first half, and then you just have a good second half, and it looks like the Home Run Derby did it, where that's your true talent level. And say you were on a 50 home run pace in the first half, you're actually a 30 home run hitter. That's still a great power hitter, but it's not really the Home Run Derby having an effect. And I think specifically with Devers, I would have no worries about him messing up his swing, because every swing he takes is like a Home Run Derby swing. He's trying to hit every single ball he swings at 500 feet. So if anybody has a swing that's already built for the Home Run Derby, that's already swinging out of their shoes every time, it's Rafael Devers.
Yep, that makes perfect sense.
So, I don't know. I just, we talked about it already, so we don't have to go into it, but I would love him in the Home Run Derby pretty much more than anything else.
Yeah, and if that's the thing. If you were to say, okay, forget everything you know about it, you're just going to make a gut call whose swing would get the most messed up, hypothetically, my answer would be Xander, if he were somehow...
I would say JD.
Eh, Well, that's because he's a head case, but that's...
Well, that's it. I mean, he talks about all the time that if he's not... His swing mechanics get messed up constantly, and he's, like, constantly working on it. So I guess I could see that with him. I think he could fix it pretty quickly, but I think he would be the guy to get it messed up. But I could see Xander,
like,
too.
I meant, like, more sustained messed up. Yeah. Because it feels, to me, with JD, it seems like if he saw a movie he didn't like, it could mess him up. Which is good, because he apparently doesn't watch many movies he doesn't like. So,
well, that's a good thing. Except last year, maybe. So, moving on from the Home Run Derby, Red Sox also may have lost Christian Arroyo. So, as of this recording, it's still not really clear what's going on with him. Arroyo also left Sunday's game. He had a little mini collision with Kike Hernandez. Looked like it was a pretty bad knee injury, but turns out they're saying it was just a bone bruise on the shin. But like I said, not sure right now if he's going to have to hit the IL. But if he does, is it too soon to call Franchi Cordero back up? So Cordero has been electric in AAA since going down. It's only been 21 games, but he's got 5 home runs. He's hitting .377, .484, .714, just going buck wild in Worcester. Have you seen enough that he can get that you would give him another chance, or is that too small a sample considering what he did in the majors?
I just don't think it seems so good to be not relevant to what he did in the majors. I would not have confidence that he's going to come back and be anything different than what he was before. Personally speaking.
I agree with you, and yet I would still call him up. I would call Duran up first. I think we all agree on that. But if they are not calling up Duran, which it seems like they're not calling up Duran, I would not be upset about calling up Cordero, mostly because he's a lefty, and they need a lefty on the bench. I mean, their bench is generally very righty heavy, and their switch hitters, Marwin Gonzalez and Danny Santana, hit better against lefties. So they need somebody who can hit righties off the bench. So that alone, I think, I would call up Cordero for, and then when you throw in how he's swinging the bat right now, and obviously the raw talent that he has when they traded for him is still there. I guess I'll put it this way. If it came down to Michael Chavis or Cordero, I think I like Chavis better as a player, and they're both hitting well at AAA right now, but I would probably go with Cordero just because his fit with the team is a little bit better right now.
Yeah, but Duran.
Well, yes, Duran is the guy that I would have called up a month ago if I could, but that does not seem to be on the table, unfortunately. All right, one last thing before we get to a listener question. We've given some grief, maybe more me than you, but I think we've both given some grief to Bobby Dalbec. But he is hitting the ball pretty well right now. He had a really strong series against the Royals. He's had a good month of June. He's hitting .250, .300, .554. The power is showing up in a big way this month. We've talked about first base potentially being a target position at the deadline. Are you confident enough in the way he's swinging right now that you don't think that you think they'll be able to avoid having to make that kind of move for a new first baseman?
I think by the time they have to make the decision, they'll have a better sample. I think Bobby is going to be a streaky hitter in his career. I think he will have times where he's like a box fan and whiffing at everything, and times where he's pounding the ball out. So my opinion on him has not changed. Let's put it that way. My opinion on what they will do around him, I think, depends on what he does in the next block leading up until the trade deadline, because if he avoids another one of those, he's almost done enough to get around it, I think. I just want Joey Gallo, but I know that that's a big ask, it's and that
probably not gonna happen.
Right, and Sense is probably not going to happen. I see them. I think, you know, Chavis is a potential first base guy if Dalbec lost it completely. But I think I have talked myself into the idea that he's probably done enough to man the position primarily for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you were saying about context matters, and I think another part of that context will be how the rest of the roster is doing, whether if they need a starting pitcher. I don't necessarily think they're going to make a big move for both positions, and same with the bullpen. If they decide they need a true late-inning arm, one of the best relievers available at the deadline, I think that would make it less likely to get Dalbec. But on the other side of the coin, if the rotation starts trending very well again and Chris Sale's coming back soon and the bullpen's pitching lights out and they decide they don't need to make a big move for pitching, maybe I could see it again. Just speaking about confidence in Dalbec specifically, and I didn't realize this until right now. I just opened up his splits page on Fangraphs. The strikeout and walk numbers still look bad. In fact, they work like worse than they have in any other month. He's striking out just under 37% of the time, only walking 3% of the time. Obviously, the sample is tiny. He's hitting crap out of the ball when he makes contact, but the underlying issues are still there. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. As much as I would like them to get Joey Gallo, I don't expect that kind of move. But I guess I could see something for like Jesus Aguilar from Miami or like CJ Krohn from Colorado. Not that I think that Krohn would even be that much of an upgrade. But I think that's the kind of move I could see. And you're right. I mean, they don't have to make the decision right now, and they won't. But I'm still not super confident that Dalbec's going to be the guy heading into September, I'll say.
Yeah, and I can see that. I think the likeliest scenario, if he's not, is that he was dealt for the guy who is. That's me.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
I mean, then, yeah, I could totally see that.
I don't think he'd be supplemented. I think he would either be...
I think he would be demoted if they traded for somebody, probably, just to keep him playing every day.
Well, that's... But I think that the team that was trading... I think... A team that was trading someone could look at Bobby Dalbec and see good things down the line, and that he would be an actual trade asset.
Yeah, but I mean, it depends what you're trading. Like, if you're trading for CJ Krohn, for example, I wouldn't give up Bobby Dalbec for CJ
Krohn. Oh, no. Yeah, but I wouldn't trade for CJ Krohn. So,
yeah, I wouldn't either. Jake put that nugget in my head last week, and that's just something I've been thinking about. I don't really like it, though. I don't think he did either, to be fair.
It teaches you to replace me with Jay.
Well, you're the one I'm on a vacation.
Yeah, but I went to the good island anyhow.
All right. So just one listener question here before we finish things out, and it is from the old ham and the bee, which I don't know if that's a reference to something, but I don't know what it is if it is. He's talking about the leadoff position that we had just mentioned. How concerning is the leadoff position right now, and who do you think should be up first in the lineup?
To me, it's no more or less concerning than it has been all year. It could be more frustrating now to people, but I mean, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. Except for maybe the guys in there have just gotten worse, with the exception of Christian Arroyo. And let me say, your Christian Arroyo graphic is, oh my God, one of my favorites. Honestly,
my Christian Arroyo graphic,
the Nomar Sports Illustrated.
Oh, yeah, that is
good. Oh, it is.
I'm very good at Photoshop.
It's perfect. But I am still, I'm just bemused by it. Now it's sort of just a running joke, and I kind of want to see how far they take it. But I think they could obviously do a lot better, but I don't really. They clearly don't want to just do the top half and bottom half of the lineup. They want to somehow kick that one spot down the road. I'm just so amused. I mean, I wrote a column about it, and they're like, they want to get these guys. The idea is these guys are not hitting well, so get them out there and let them go seize the day. It's your turn, baby. Yeah, but the thing is, they just can't do it.
It's not working.
It's great. It's funny. It's like, it's a theory that's a nice strategy. It's like, it's not working.
I mean, I think we've talked about it so much, and you keep bringing up the point that it just feels like the only point that matters, basically, is they just keep winning. And I mean, they're in first place as we sit here Tuesday afternoon, so it's working. I don't have any indication that this is true, and it would surprise me if it is, but the only thing that makes sense to me is that Verdugo said that he doesn't want to hit leadoff. Again, he hit leadoff all year last year. He never seemed to be in a bad mood or like not happy with the situation. So I don't have any reason to believe that's the truth, but that's the only explanation that would sit well with me, that he's not leading off. And again, they keep winning. It's working. I guess you don't change things if it's working. They've scored the third most runs of baseball, but it seems crazy to me.
It's hilarious. I mean,
it is kind of funny.
It is funny. I mean, it's especially funny because the aforementioned Matt Corey, our former colleague, and, you know, we're part of the same circles on Twitter, is just like, he's going to lose his mind. He's literally going to lose his mind.
Brady, too.
But Brady's mind is long gone. It's just that's long fair. Gone. It's funny to me also because there was a time in the statistical revolution or whatever you call it. Your batting order doesn't matter.
It doesn't. I mean, that's the thing. And I think they're kind of proving that.
Yes. Except for no one is looking at the proof. Yeah. No one is looking at the proof and saying, oh, well, look, they're winning, so it's fine. Except for them.
Yeah, exactly. Core is looking at it, and that's it. I mean, I mostly agree with you. I think it is. It doesn't matter that much, and it's also easy to complain about, fun to complain about. And it is a little maddening. I mean, when they lose a game, when Kike Hernandez is the last batter, say, and he's in the leadoff spot, and Alex Verdugo's in the on-deck circle, that is maddening. And in a race this close, like I said, it comes down to things on the margins, and something like that could potentially have a greater effect in a close race like this. So, I mean, I think I still definitely want to see Verdugo in the leadoff spot, but I'm with you where at this point I'm kind of just laughing more than anything else. It's just, what else can you do?
Well, and so this, to just wrap it up, thinking about, you know, listening to a lot of basketball podcasts because it's, you know, that time of year, and talking about the distinct differences between the postseason and the regular season, and one thing I heard with respect to Giannis and why he's had so much more trouble in the postseason is that, you know, guys won't take charges in the regular season because whatever, I'm going to play again in 2 days. Postseason, they'll take charges. So I think that to some degree, the Red Sox, especially if they keep winning, like I would not expect them to be rolling out an actual bad hitter in the playoffs.
Well, that was sort of...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I was thinking of that. But, I mean, you're not going to make that change in October. I mean, you need to make that change before that, at least a month before that. I would think more than a month before that. So I'm curious how much longer this will last. Because I agree with you. I think at some point, whether it is maybe Jaren Duran is the guy that they're holding that spot for. I mean, we've thrown that theory out before, and maybe that's what it is. But I do think at some point the other shoe is going to drop, and I am very curious when that moment comes.
I've got it. I figured it out. This is perfect.
Let's do it.
He's a switch hitter. He's very highly regarded. Let's trade for Wander Franco.
There we go. Heim Bloom knows him, so that should make it a done deal.
Second baseman, let's do it.
Let's go.
Problem solved.
All right. Well, that seems like the right place to end it. Red Sox are going to trade for Wander Franco. It has been confirmed. So thank you again for listening to today's show. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell your friends about us. Tell your family about us. Tell complete strangers about us. Please leave us a rating and a review. I've been told that's helpful. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. Brian is at Brian Joyner. Brian with a Y. Joyner with an I. And you can find all of our writing at overthemonster.com. And we will be back with you next week.